RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with me, Beans. I've lost my co-host for yet another episode because his beautiful baby girl was born, and he's being a daddy, which is perfectly acceptable, and I'll give him a pass for these shows that he's missing. I've seen some photos. She is absolutely beautiful, and he is like gazing at her with like the love of a father. It's just beautiful. I've been so happy over the past couple of days because of Frank and Lauren, and we just want to wish them huge congratulations for introducing us to Aurora Rose, the beautiful bouncing little baby girl. Just so awesome. I'm so happy for him. I really am. So, of course, the world has been busy over the past couple days since we last spoke on Monday. Lots of things going on out there. Lots of mishaps by the Biden campaign. As we know, we've learned over the past couple days that is the Harris campaign, not the Biden campaign. Kamala Harris is actually the one who's running for president, even though we don't see her either. What's really crazy is that I'm scrolling through my Twitter account. We're going to start off on COVID, okay? I scroll through my Twitter account and I see Nate Kane, whistleblower who will be at AmFest, by the way. I just realized he's going to be down at AmFest, which is going to be great because I'll get to meet him and talk to him. He had his account locked for saying the following. I recently saw a mask being sold that had, quote, "the media is the virus" written across it. I laughed, but didn't really contemplate it much. It's a sentiment that many probably agree with. Even Donald Trump has called the media very dishonest. And then there is the famous tweet, and he, quote, tweeted something that we can't see. And they locked his account, suspended his account for that. I am really, really, really not shocked, but it is getting bad out there. They are really trying here. We had Joe Biden at a campaign event yesterday playing the song Despacito and fake dancing along to it in an attempt to pander to Hispanic voters. It's really a blatant attempt to pander, which doesn't work anymore. Kamala Harris went to a restaurant down in Southern Florida and thought that her queen, the highness, could step into this restaurant and everybody would bow down at her feet. Well, little did she know, she wasn't welcome in that restaurant. The restaurant wants to keep itself politically neutral, understands that they probably have patrons from both sides of the aisle. We're going to listen to a short clip right now of one of the board members from the parent company or the management company that runs these restaurants telling us why it is he did not think that Kamala Harris should have just traipsed in to his establishment.
South Florida restaurant owner is speaking out about the fallout after a visit from Democratic vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris. NBC6's Steve Litz is live in Doral with a story you'll see only on 6, Steve.
But hi, Jackie. This area was buzzing yesterday when Senator Kamala Harris dipped into this restaurant here unannounced. It's Amaze Latin Flavors, pretty popular Venezuelan and other Latin flavors served here. So yesterday's visit, Jackie, is not getting great reviews today. There's even internet chatter encouraging a boycott of this restaurant. An executive with the restaurant told him Mrs. Harris wasn't welcome here yesterday.
We don't use the company for political reasons.
Andres Garcia, not pleased with Senator Kamala Harris's visit to his restaurant yesterday.
We are very respectful of every individual in our organization, and we will never take, as an organization, a political position.
Garcia, president of the board of directors for the Amaze Latin Flavors restaurants, telling us he had no idea the Democratic vice presidential nominee and her campaign were stopping by yesterday.
In respect to our stakeholder, we wouldn't support that. If they will ask, we will say, no, we're not going to do it.
Garcia says he found out on social media she was at the restaurant and some of the posts were critical.
I learned the hard way. Sometimes when we look into the social media, and we take it for granted what people say in the social media.
I did have a brief conversation with the Florida representative for the Biden-Harris campaign. They are not interested in making comment on the story.
Of course they're not interested in commenting on the story. Why would they comment on that? It's embarrassing. Not only that, but there was a caravan supposedly yesterday down there. You know, like the Trump caravans we're seeing all over the country, and only like 15 people showed up. Also, outside of the Biden event that was going to be going on, there were more Trump supporters out there than there were Biden supporters. The tides are changing, people. They're not going to be able to keep... That's why they're trying to keep this guy boxed up in his basement. And her, too. She's so fake. People see through this. We're in the era of authenticity. Nobody wants your pandering nonsense. Nobody appreciates it. Nobody. We're tired of it. I had a little argument with a journalist, I guess you could call him, from SNY, Sports Network in New York, who was announcing that they were doing the Black National Anthem at the Giant game. And the comments underneath the tweet were just not friendly. They were just not happy about it. There's only one national anthem. There are not several different national anthems. This is what the country is one national anthem to stand for the country. And this guy started attacking people for saying these things. Ralph Vacchiano is his name. I'm going to read some of his comments. He said the Giants are standing in line along the goal line as, quote, lift every voice and sing is played. And now they're back to the locker room. And everybody was like commenting on it, completely ratioed tweet. This is some of his response. You're awfully triggered by a song. I mean, it's a song literally about unity, but I guess not everyone's in favor of unity. You do you. This is what he was doing. He was attacking everybody who was saying that this is kind of an abhorrent thing as being against unity. That's not how it works. We're wise to you. We get what you're doing. We're not stupid. We're not stupid. We know what you're doing. Your holier-than-thou virtue signaling is not going to work. Just now as we speak, there was an entry into the Flynn case for the government. United States Attorney Kenneth Cole is entering his appearance on behalf of the United States. I don't know who Kenneth Cole is other than it's spelled differently than the designer. But I'll look into him and let you know what's going on here. I'm looking at it right now. Bear with me. This is what happens when things break live. So this guy, Ralph Vacchiano, goes virtue signaling against everybody in the chat. And I kind of lost it and did a couple of voice notes on Twitter about it. Like, we know what you're doing, dude. You think we're stupid? I said, stop with your sanctimonious holier-than-thou nonsense. We don't need two anthems, one for black people and one for everyone else. I don't care if the message is unicorns farting daisies. The act of this in and of itself is ridiculously divisive, and you are a part of the problem. And it's true. It's true. They're using this as a cudgel, like they do with everything. It's so gross. I'm so tired of it. Who isn't tired of this? Everybody's tired of this. Even people that thought that they were Democrats are tired of this. It's becoming very clearly a line in the sand. You're either American or you're not. And that means the anti-American candidate is not going to fare very well. There's some statistics now that are showing that a lot of the absentee votes and the mail-in votes that are coming in are overwhelmingly Democrat and are overwhelmingly being discarded for problems. Here is a clip just released from Svetlana Lakova about Stefan Halper, who's somebody that she has spoken about. Somebody she's spoken about extensively on the Dark to Light podcast, and we've covered as well. Let's listen to John Solomon talking with Maria Bartiromo about an hour ago.
from CIA Director Gina Haspel, reportedly saying in the Woodward book that the Justice Department's investigation into the Russia probe would be, quote, a nightmare for the CIA. This is according to Bob Woodward's new book. John, we know that John Brennan was leading the CIA at the time of all of the investigations going on into Trump campaign people. How liable is he for creating a narrative that did not exist, that that Trump colluded with Russia? And what's your take on Gina Haspel's comments here?
Well, I've talked to CIA officials for a long time, and I know exactly what their fears are. We may get to see those fears in the public very soon. Devin Nunes, back in 2018, when he was House Intelligence Committee chairman, sent a secret referral to the CIA inspector general that challenged the CIA spycraft during the Russia collusion investigation, and specifically the conclusion that John Brennan made as he was going out the door, that Russia was specifically trying to help Trump win and Hillary couldn't lose. I can tell you that in that document, that classified document, there is a lot of bad news for the CIA's work. And the hint that maybe the CIA also had evidence Russia was trying to hide, help Hillary Clinton, and they hid that information from the American public.
Yeah, we also know that the Office of Net Assessments paid out washed up spies potentially to entrap Trump campaign people. I'm talking about Stefan Halper, who was making huge amounts of money being paid out by the Office of Net Assessments, $411,000 right before the warrant to spy on Carter Page was secured. Was John Brennan running that?
I have a funny feeling the FBI was running that based on my reporting, though I wouldn't be surprised if CIA and Halper had a lot of contacts as well. I think we're going to learn more about that in the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the release of new information that illuminates what Stefan Halper was doing, what ONA was doing, and who their handlers were inside law enforcement and U.S. intelligence. I'm hearing of a declassification that could be coming down the road very quickly.
Ooh, more declassified documents. Now let's get the indictments on the table, please. They're coming. Adam Housley is a former Fox News reporter who left because of the politics and the nonsense and the, you know, the propaganda. He's an Emmy-winning former senior news correspondent, and he used to play baseball. He says, you know, he says a bunch of stuff, but he's not, you know, he's been saying this consistently the entire time. That I got a text from somebody that, you know, someone interesting this morning or last night, if I can find it. My text messages are off the hook lately. Hold on. There will be no report while an ongoing investigation continues. People have flipped. There will be indictments. Yes, 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 yes. Nobody wants to wait for these anymore. Everybody's really frustrated and angry. Nobody wants to keep saying, okay, when they I get it. I totally understand. But we can always listen to Barr. Here's a clip of William Barr just the other day saying the same thing he said for a very long time.
One of the reasons I think I was in a position to lead it is because I'm not looking for anything after this. I was retired. I'm happy in my private life.
Do you believe that there was a concerted effort by the intelligence community to undermine this president?
You mean before the election in 2016?
And even after?
Well, I do think there was I think that there was unjustified spying on the Trump campaign, and we're looking into the motivations of that. And then afterward, I think one of the most appalling things in history was an effort to carry out a counterintelligence investigation against the president and his administration, without any basis whatsoever, and we're trying to determine exactly what the motivations were there.
Durham's investigation, you obviously have a sense of it. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that we will have some resolution before the election? And do you have any sense yet of where this might lead?
I'm getting a sense of the whole story, and I've said there's sort of two aspects to this. Finding out what happened. And then there's another question, which is, did anyone cross any lines in the course of that activity and violate criminal law, which is something you have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt before you can charge it. And so we're looking at both of those aspects of it. I think the American, and I've said, the American people will get the full story from Durham. And if people cross the line and committed a crime, then the charges will be brought. One of the reasons I think I would.
So he said the same thing he said over and over. Everybody needs to understand they need to prove that a crime was committed, which I think that they're doing. And there are more than one U.S. attorney on this. There are several. They're looking at the Mueller probe. And we're just now in a holding pattern. John Solomon said a few months ago around Labor Day would be where we started seeing some activity. I personally really expected something last week and did not get it. What we got was that propagandized resignation from the Durham probe, where one of the people that was on the team with him decided to step down for reasons unknown, and the fake news media went nuts with it. No leaks from Durham except this. This they know all about. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. So there's that. If we're having fun right now, which I think we are, I wanted to share something with you guys, because language alert, I'm going to warn you right now, there's a language alert on this video, but I had to share it. Good friend of mine, you know who you are, sent me a video of their dad. She asked him some questions about masks. If you're listening with your children and you don't like them to hear foul language, now would be the time to probably lower the volume. This is an 85-year-old New York Italian talking about what he feels about wearing a mask.
In Walmart? No. I haven't worn a mask in Walmart. I go there all the time with her, too.
All right.
She doesn't wear a mask either.
Oh, okay. And what if you go into the store and they
ask, I'm not wearing a mask. That's it.
What if they start yelling at you?
Let them yell. You don't want me? You want me out? I'll leave.
Okay.
I don't give a. They don't go no further than that.
Okay.
What pisses me off is the fucking people that give you a dirty look or say something. I just go fuck yourself. I just said them words. Go fuck yourself. Call a cop.
We're gonna bring more pop. We're gonna bring more pop to the Tracy Beans Twitter timeline, because seriously, people are just feeling great about this clip. They really are. He is America, says Spring. I love him. Great. This guy is awesome. Best answer ever. This is great. I love Italians. They don't care what you say or think. They don't care. This man says exactly what we're thinking. I miss the old Brooklyn I grew up in. We should all have this attitude when it comes to masks. F you, call the cops. I'm with him, thumbs up. Me too, old Italian dude. Me too. It's just great. I think that Pops has a lot of really, really good opinions. I've heard some of them since I know Pops, and I think Pops is going to become a permanent fixture on the Tracy Beans Twitter timeline. We love you, Pop. We love you. You're amazing. Being an Italian who married a Puerto Rican guy who's also very Italian, being from New York, living in Brooklyn, living in Queens, living on Long Island, which is how I used to say it, I get this attitude. It feels good. It feels like home. The old home. Before everything got ruined, the old home. You guys New Yorkers, you remember the old home? The old motherland? Where, you know, it's funny because, like, sometimes my kids show me TikTok and stuff. And, like, they have, like, the guys, like, the Guido guys from, like, Staten Island. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's, like, every guy I ever saw at the club before I turned 25. And they're still mostly the same out there with their hair sticking up and their earring and their tan and their T-shirt. So funny. I kind of, you know, sometimes I do miss it a little bit. But I'm so much happier down here. I had to share Pop with you. Pop had to be shared. There was no getting around it today. I love you, Papa. Now we're going to switch to some interesting happenings that are going on right now inside of the Senate, the House, this whistleblower quote complaint. Frank and I talked with you about this whistleblower complaint last week. We talked about how in there it talks about Antifa and how they were trying to politicize. The assertion is that Wolf, etc., were trying to change the intelligence that was being reported to inaccurately reflect that Antifa was organized. And there was a broader sort of message at play there. And what we learned is that through Catherine Herridge, there was a release or a letter written from Wolf, who was denied all of this. And he mentions in there emails that are coming from this whistleblower in quotes to people inside of the administration, which dispute everything that he said. He specifically writes in there that he was not ever instructed to change anything, you know, and would never do something like that. The statement from, well, let's first, Catherine Herridge says, breaking, whistleblower CBS News has, or hashtag whistleblower, CBS News has obtained Department of Homeland Security response to Chairman Schiff's House Intel Committee, includes whistleblower complaint from former acting Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis, Brian Murphy. Why it matters. The DHS tells the House committee emails between Murphy and his colleagues are in, quote, direct contradiction to Mr. Murphy's claims. The key section here is page 2 in this letter. It says, in this production, you'll find an email from Mr. Murphy to other department employees on July 25th, 2020, stating, quote, the acting secretary has never given me any direction on what to do regarding threats. The same applies to the acting deputy secretary. This email, which is in direct contradiction to Mr. Murphy's claims in the OIG complaint, is part of a longer thread and is being provided for further context as responsive to the committee's request in Portland investigation. We talked about this. The entire purpose for this is to either or both, A, get out ahead of the resolution that the Antifa Portland riots are organized by a greater organization, which is being rolled up as we speak, because politically it looks absolutely horrible for the left. And B, put a psyop, for lack of a better word, out on the American people, as per Adam Schiff, that somehow these Antifa attacks all over the country are actually being run by Russia, which is just ridiculous. Not only that, but also in this email, in these emails, there is a portion there that states Brian Murphy talking about how organized Antifa is, that this is no longer just a, you know, an unorganized random thing. It's clear that they're being orchestrated and things are being, you know, things are being done sort of from a higher guided perspective. And I am just beside myself right now. Mark Zaid comes out with a statement. Remember, Mark Zaid, fan of Disney. Mark Zaid is the attorney in this case. Of course, he represents all of the, quote, whistleblowers looking to enact a coup on the American president. He stated as much early on, right after President Trump was elected. He says this. The selective disclosure of heavily redacted documents by the DHS neither contradicts what's contained in Mr. Murphy's whistleblower complaint, nor even supports the character assassination attempt by the department. Our role, however, is not to publicly speak for Mr. Murphy regarding official DHS positions, but to facilitate his ability to provide complete and truthful information to the relevant oversight authorities. Mr. Murphy has identified documentation that goes to the heart of the issue, as well as that supporting his whistleblower complaint, and he's more than willing to disclose this information to Congress and inspectors general, and we have asked the DHS to facilitate those disclosures in the proper manner. How do they have the gall? The gall. And going back real quick to the Kamala Harris thing, just from a strategic perspective, Kamala Harris showing up at a restaurant down in Southern Florida and having literally no one be appreciative of her being there shows their hubris in stunning fashion. She really thinks they're in such a bubble. They're in such a bubble that she really thinks she can march in to a restaurant in Southern Florida and have everybody worship the ground she walks on, completely oblivious. I mean, what a campaign gaffe. Completely oblivious to the fact that nobody wanted her there. That means they're unprepared. Unaware is unprepared. Unaware is unprepared. It's really a telling characteristic of where they are in a bubble, thinking that the 3%, I've said this so many times, and I hope you guys understand it and at least appreciate it and think about it. The 3% extremists on Twitter are not the majority. These people are literally stuck on Twitter and social media. They don't know what is happening around them in the real world. They have literally no idea that a good large now majority of the country thinks that they're absolutely horrifically dangerous for us. Sure, there are Americans out there who just despise President Trump and don't want him to win. But there are also a lot of people who have they're done. You guys overplayed your hand so poorly, the biggest strategic gaffe you could ever have made, ever. I was on with Liz Calloway and Nick Summers this morning. I do a normal Wednesday slot here in South Carolina, which is really fun. And we were talking today about how the fact that homeschooling and, you know, virtual school has become a thing has allowed parents a foot inside of the classroom to see what their kids are being indoctrinated with on a daily basis. And it ain't flying well. It ain't flying well. It's pretty amazing, actually, to see. It's pretty amazing. Parents are getting to see, in a lot of cases, that their kids are being showered with Marxist propaganda, and it's revolutionizing education. Things that we had been, as activists, trying to get people to embrace for decades are now being embraced because they overplayed their hand. These lockdowns are their own making. And God bless, they're turning around to stab them they're turning around to be a thorn in their side. The school lockdowns, the business lockdowns, the unconstitutional orders, which are now ruled unconstitutional from Democrat state governors, all of it is turning around to bite them right in the behind. Takes a little while to get there, but we're getting there. I went on a little tangent, but I wanted to read an article because this is all going to loop together. And it's a little fuzzy right now how it's going to loop together, but I want you guys to think about this and remember a few things. The whistleblower complaint, Adam Schiff saying that it was Russia behind the Antifa attacks, and the trouble that Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley are having right now because they are investigating Ukraine corruption. There were three clips released this morning from NABU, which is the organization looking into Ukrainian corruption, who have recordings of Poroshenko talking to Joe Biden. The three clips that were released this morning, in my opinion, outside of the hypocrisy, aren't as bad as people are making them out to sound. They are bad, but Joe Biden basically says he's going to stick around to be involved in diplomacy after he leaves the office, which is horrible. He's going to sit around and accuse people of the Logan Act, but then commit the Logan Act himself, a violation of the Logan Act himself. So there's a lot of things going on right now. This article is by Jerry Dunleavy from 2 days ago. GOP Senate Intelligence Committee rejects requests by GOP senators for documents from Russia investigation. Senate Intelligence Committee rejects requests by GOP senators for documents from Russia investigation. Do you want to know why? Because that Senate intelligence report was riddled with errors. It's a propaganda piece. It is riddled with demonstrable errors. Not only that, it was used by Judge Gleason, the friend of the court in the General Flynn case, to make arguments that are just blatantly false. Again, some people get on my case for criticizing some of the senators that were in the Senate Judiciary Committee talking to Sally Yates, when Sally Yates would over and over again assert that General Flynn lied about sanctions. And nobody corrected her. General Flynn never mentioned sanctions. It is a critical point, and it's something that's being parroted now all over the place because nobody corrected the record, either because they didn't care to or because they didn't know the case. And if you're going to be in there questioning, if you're going to be in there questioning a witness, you'd better know your stuff. I would have been studying that nonsense for weeks. Or get your staffers to do it for you. Don't let lies like that go unchallenged. It was a travesty that that was allowed to happen. You finally have these people sitting in front of you and you let them lie blatantly? The Republican and Democrat leaders on the Senate Intelligence Committee rejected a broad request from two Republican Senate leaders seeking access to the panel's records to assist in their investigation into the Trump-Russia investigators. Acting Chairman Marco Rubio of Florida and Vice Chairman Mark Warner of Virginia, Mark Warner, who was involved, rejected a late August letter from Senate Homeland Security Chairman Ron Johnson of Wisconsin and Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who said that they respect the authority of the Senate Intelligence Committee to protect its interests, adding that ultimately we have the right as United States senators to access the records. Accordingly, they say, due to a technicality, Rubio says, we must reject the absolutist interpretation of Rule 26 that you propose. If this committee elects to share materials it's collected and generated in the course of its investigation into Russia's efforts to interfere in the 2016 election, it will do so pursuant to these longstanding committee rules and specifically the joint agreement of the chairman and vice chairman, adding, independent of whether that agreement is forthcoming, our position on the matter obviously does not preclude you from pursuing your own investigation using your own authorities as you see fit within the confines of your jurisdictions. I always wonder why it is that Matt Gaetz is so supportive of Marco Rubio. It just is weird. Really weird. The GOP wanted the access so that they could read the transcripts of certain interviews that were conducted and look at the records. They're doing their own investigation. They're talking about unmasking. They want to review the transcripts. They wanted records related to the CIA's contacts with Perk and Coy, Michael Sussman and Elias. It was Elias who hired Fusion GPS. The letter says, as part of our investigation into the presidential transition in 2016 and early 2017, the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee authorized the issuance of subpoenas, if necessary, to several individuals regarding the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation and the unmasking of U.S. persons or entities during the transition. While seeking the voluntary cooperation of several prospective witnesses, several have requested and provided permission for us to review the transcripts of their testimony before your committee because of the overlapping subject matter. The review of these discrete number of transcripts would assist in our investigation by narrowing the areas to be addressed with each witness and may possibly even obviate the need for us to speak with them. We also have no intention of duplicating your efforts, so we request access to these transcripts to ensure the best use of time by committee staff and the witnesses. In addition, we have requested records relating to the CIA's contacts with Michael Sussman, Mark Elias, and records relating to communications between John Brennan and Harry Reid. Since then, the CIA has asked that we request those documents from you. There is big stuff going on with Johnson and Grassley, and they are being attacked, completely attacked. Really, really, really crazy. As an aside, the Trump team just came out with a really, really damning ad about Joe Biden reading a teleprompter to answer any questions he's asked. And we're going to close out the show today a little early because it's really hard. It's really hard to do an hour on your own. It just is. But before we do, a couple things. Number one, the CDC just put out a warning on the coronavirus website. Are you ready? Cloth masks that are used to slow the spread of COVID-19 offer little protection against wildfire smoke. They don't catch small particles found in wildfire smoke that can harm your health. Limit your time outside when it's smoky. Learn how you can protect yourself from wildfire smoke. Fun fact, smoke particles are far larger than COVID particles. There was an open letter to President Trump published on uncoverdc.com by Daniel Babinski that I wanted to read before we leave today. Sorry about the shortened show, guys. It says this: Dear Mr. President, My purpose for writing today is to address the COVID-19 situation. According to the CDC report you quoted recently, only 6% of people who had less than two comorbidities died from COVID. And I'm sure you remember Dr. Deborah Birx telling us that people listed as COVID deaths even if they didn't die from COVID. Currently, if someone contracts COVID, that person has between a 97 and 99.85 chance of recovery. And yet, despite a steadily declining death rate nationwide, the medical establishment continues to act as if contracting COVID is a death sentence. If I may use a word we hear with increasing regularity, this is gaslighting. They're telling us one thing while the data suggests something else. In many states, your political enemies play on that. They continue to enact harsh lifestyle restrictions, all while blaming you for the pain and harassment that they inflict. To cut to the chase, it's become obvious that decisions and warnings from some of your advisors are made with ulterior motives. Mr. President, I don't sit on the board of any multi-million dollar corporation, but as an executive coach for over 30 years, I have clients who do, and my clients pay me to provide brutally honest insights based on my observations so they can have the best chance of success. I realize the following's unsolicited, but I want you and our country to succeed, so allow me to share some observations. In 2010, Dr. Fauci was named to the Leadership Advisory Team for the Decade of Vaccines, a program started by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's unfathomable to me that this was not disclosed to the American public from the start. Two, Fauci is on record saying, quote, things can't and won't get back to how they were until there's a vaccine. Interestingly, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the largest contributor to the World Health Organization, which donates more annually than any nation state, has invested heavily in vaccine manufacturing. In fact, their plans for this have been long established. On the very day you declared a national emergency to combat coronavirus, Bill Gates resigned from the board of directors of both Microsoft and Berkshire Hathaway. As an executive coach, I know that nobody at that level makes such a move without a specific purpose. I don't believe the timing of his resignations was coincidental. When you expressed hope in the efficacy of the Zelenko protocol, which is zinc, zithromycin, and hydroxychloroquine, for treating COVID-19, Dr. Fauci downplayed it. Yet in 2005, the National Institute of Health published an article about, in the Virology Journal, titled Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. Since Dr. Fauci was already the director of the NIH at that time, he likely knew of HCQ's effectiveness in fighting coronavirus as early as 2005. Despite thousands of frontline doctors going on record saying that hydroxychloroquine is effective in treating COVID-19, some doctors are told their medical licenses will be revoked if they prescribe HCQ to their COVID patients. In fact, some have lost their jobs because of it. And doctors I've interviewed have told me that for the first time in their decades-long medical careers, they've been instructed not to prescribe a medication, even a drug that's been used safely around the world for 65 years. They state they've never before seen such a directive from the FDA. Other treatments are also successful for treating COVID-19, such as FDA-approved methods of blood purification and use of a nebulizer with budesonide. Mr. President, it's become clear to me that despite America's doctors finding viable, effective, low-cost treatments to combat COVID, both your political enemies and some in the medical establishment do not have your best interests in mind. Some want to see you fail. Others are motivated by the money that's flowing from our nation's coffers. For example, healthcare systems are financially rewarded for admitting COVID-19 patients to the hospital and also for reporting coronavirus deaths as disclosed by the director of the CDC. Additionally, states receive money from FEMA for each new case of COVID-19 identified, and they've grown accustomed to receiving that money. As of this, as the Senate president pro tempore in Idaho recently said when he voted against ending Idaho's state of emergency, quote, "We would forfeit tens of millions of dollars that President Trump and Congress have set aside." Beyond the FEMA money, vaccines themselves are also a big business. Although we have effective and inexpensive treatments for COVID, Mr. Gates and his colleagues in the medical establishment, including some of your advisors, are saying the only way to return to normal is by vaccinating the world. I feel the need to underscore that the push for a vaccine is not simply an altruistic effort. The money involved in creating vaccine manufacturing facilities and delivery systems is not being spent. It's being invested. Their words. People affiliated with these organizations expect and anticipate a profit. And with the stated goal of vaccinating the world, it will be a large profit. Mr. President, some of your advisors are recommending against inexpensive yet tremendously effective treatments and have a clear conflict of interest. So where does that leave us? We've heard a lot of talk that a vaccine is on the way and military will be involved in its distribution. Some governors are telling their states that vaccines will be required before they can return to normal. Again, my work involves giving brutally honest insights based on my observations. So although the following is unsolicited, I ask you consider three things. Expand your pool of advisors in the arena of vaccines. Don't let advisors linked to the vaccine industry be your main source of information. Abraham Lincoln had his team of rivals, and King Solomon said many advisors bring success. We have effective and inexpensive treatments for COVID, and with such an excellent recovery rate, 97% to 99.85%, no reason exists for vaccines to be mandatory. Please also push for the FDA to approve the Zelenko protocol to be prescribed at symptom onset to prevent needless hospitalizations and needless coronavirus deaths. Please remove the financial incentives for hospitals to admit COVID patients. Money going to the states from the federal government, our tax dollars, creates a disincentive for doctors to treat people early with existing inexpensive yet effective medication. In closing, it has become obvious to me that some people giving you advice do not have your or America's best interest in mind. They're thinking about their own agendas and their own pocketbooks. And for the sake of the American way of life, please consider the points I made. With much respect, Daniel Babinski. As a side note, I see many of your supporters erroneously labeled as anti-vaxxers, when in fact they are simply anti-mandatory vaxxers. I ask you to also take that into consideration. When the medical establishment comes up with a vaccine, please ensure it is not mandatory and that vaccines are not required for Americans to move about freely. Other viable treatments for COVID exist. If it's fantastic, I mean, just a spectacular letter. It'll be in the show notes below if you want to share it with your friends, which I would be greatly appreciative of. If you go to, just to give you guys a roundup of what's going on in the next couple of days or weeks, I'm sorry. October 2nd through October 4th in Washington, D.C. is the Walkaway Unsilent March on Washington. I can tell you from experience over the past several months in planning this, it is going to be an absolutely fantastic event. Security is strong for this event. You can come to this event and you will be protected. They have a plan the likes of which I don't think many events have ever seen for security. I want everybody to try and make the trip to DC for this if you can. It's important. Next, October 8th through 11th in Miami at Trump Doral, the American Priority Conference. I will be there as their official correspondent. I'm just going to name off some of the speakers that have been announced so far, and you'll have an understanding about what we can expect. There's a lot more coming, though, that haven't been announced. Matt Gaetz will be there. Dinesh D'Souza, Corey Lewandowski, Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. James Neuenschwander. These are the frontline doctors. Roger Stone, Del Bigtree, who I have referenced in a number of my pieces on coronavirus, does a great podcast. Robert Kennedy Jr. will be in attendance at AmpFest 2020. George Papadopoulos, me, Cambry Nelson, Dr. Shannon Croner, Dr. Teresa Dicer, David Harris Jr., Joey Gilbert, Charles Woods, Craig Sawyer, Deanna Lorraine, Sabine Durden, Tina Forte, Ricky Rebel, DB Fugate, Eric Blanford, Nate Kane, Dr. Bruce Fong. He is the Dr. Bruce and Joey. They're the doctors. I did the story about that ended up on Laura Ingraham that sued the state of Nevada and Sisolak over HCQ. Zach Voorhees will be there. Joel Patrick. Bryson Gray. He does all those great songs. Laura Loomer will be there. The Milk and Cooks. Cardillo. John Cardillo will be there. We will see Mindy Robinson, Carpe Donctum, and there are several others that will be added over the coming weeks. You can go to the website, which is AmericanPriority.com, and click to buy your tickets. You could use the code BEANS for a discount on your tickets. It's going to be a fun week where you're going to learn a whole lot. If you wanted more information on the Unsilent Majority March on Washington, you can go to walkawaycampaign.com, and you can go to the walkaway, hashtag walkaway ultimate weekend. You start the weekend with an event including Lara Trump, Diamond and Silk, Katie Hopkins, and Shamika Michelle. And then the next day will be the march and the rally. Speaking at the march, obviously Brandon, Dan Crenshaw will be there, Scott Pressler, Lorenzo Lamas will make an appearance, Maj Torre, Shamika Michelle, Rogan O'Hanley, Blair White, Joy Vila, Katie Hopkins, Mike Harlow, Buzz Patterson, myself, Dr. Carlin Borsenko. And so I'm sitting in the car here with Helga. Say hello.
Hello.
And I got an email from our amazing producers over at Radio Influence letting me know that the last 3 minutes of the show just magically disappeared. So I asked him if he could put a cool sound effect in and let me close the show from my car hours after I recorded it. So you have probably just heard me stop talking about who's speaking at the AmpFest 2020 event. You can check in the show notes for a link to their website to check out all the amazing speakers that they've got. I also said that Friday I would be joined by the absolutely amazing Mike Opelka for co-host, which will be really, really fun. And this is what happens when you've got technical difficulties. You've got to work on the fly. So you've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with me, Beans, and new daddy Frank, who's hiding in the hospital somewhere. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Later.
This is a Live Bold and Boss Up quick fix on Radio Influence.
Guys, today we are talking about emotional intelligence. We've been actually hearing about it a lot lately from our last guest speaker that we had on the show to, you know, hearing everyone talk about becoming woke, to also everyone talking about kind of elevating oneself. So we've done a lot of research and, you know, experience with ourselves, our teams, our family, kind of read over again the Emotional Intelligence 2.0 book, so you don't have to. So we're going to try to break it down as much as possible today and dive as deep as we can with the time we have.
Yeah, no, I'm excited because I feel like you've been talking about emotional intelligence for a while now. And whenever you first started talking about it, I'm like, Ash, you are over my head. I don't know what you're talking about. But now I feel like I've heard about it a lot more. I think it's like big in the business world and, you know, in leadership roles, kind of what sets you apart. But what is emotional intelligence?
Yeah. So, I guess the traditional definition, right, is like the capacity to be aware of, control, and express one's emotions, to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically, which is a lot, right? I think.
So explain that in layman's terms.
Layman's terms, I think just being aware that you're having that experience and being able to separate yourself from that emotion to be able to look at it from almost like a third party view, right? Like, oh, I'm having this emotion, and being able to just look at it before you react, mm-hmm. I think is huge.
Live Bold and Boss Up with Stephanie Marchese and Ashley Jaraki can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com.